little they could actually wear the clothes and how quickly they grow out of them. I think that's really where the idea necessarily clicked, as far as just like, why don't they rent all their clothes, spent your hard-earned money on, and want them to kind of be excited about, but it literally only fits them for a few months.
Of course, it's a very common problem.
So it's definitely something I had dealt with like as an uncle. We've been sending out paid beta boxes. I think our longest customers are at 25 or 26 months now.
Now, if they don't like a piece in a box?
So it's rental, so the goal is that you get all the eight pieces for 30 days. You might not like every single piece. So it's more about the clothing genre. So as far as like jazz is like preppy classical looks, whereas like indie folk is more kind of like sustainable, eco-friendly. Hip hop is streetwear, pop is trendy. Funk is like wild, crazy prints and things like that. So helping kind of with our recommendation engine.
Are you dealing with like big brands like Oshkosh?
So we don't do any fast fashion brands. We wouldn't carry brand like that.
So that's part of your...
sustainability focus. Yeah, I'm trying to not pick out any fast fashion brands with the buddies from elementary school, getting everyone kind of called up and, I mean, at the field at the right time, and just kind of obviously in the before the times of cell phones, just kind of hoping everyone that says they're coming will actually come.
Was Mark Cuban already out of there?
We actually ran the same bar.
Really?
But different, obviously different ownership, because he owned it at the time that he was doing
it. Did you own that bar?
No, not to get to learn sales and operations at such a huge scale where some little change like eliminating quarters, for example, can increase.
Holy crap.
Yeah, I don't think he's letting us go through.
That guy means business.
Yeah.
look at this guy. That guy is meant business.
Very fast.
Is this of your own?
We started something in school. It's called B-Town Living. It was really like, you mean rent.com or apartments.com before all those existed, but just for the like Bloomington where Indiana University was. So. For us, I don't know if you want to go back that way, but yeah, for us, it was kind of like, I think the biggest thing we found and that was lacking on most of those sites were just that, kids cared about location more than anything, just that we needed to kind of like on the fly and I had done it with a friend, but he was already had a full-time job. So it's kind of a side project to him. So
it's one of the, it's one of those classic things where it's difficult to motivate your co-founder sufficiently.
Like software so that you could tell, like within a physical location, how many people were there as far as like the percentage full, the male female ratio, even like the average age. Really kind of obviously save you hundreds of thousands of dollars, I'm sure, or thousands of dollars on cabs and things like that, going to the place that
at.
When I was in Bloomington still, hard to sell them on, I mean, improving their operations and things like that. We did get a lot of, traction with like the liquor brands and people like don't want to know how their tastings and their samplings are going. 9% friends and 1% customers to 99% customers and 1% friends. So it was less interesting to get paid to go out because you weren't necessarily with your friends anymore. So for that aspect, I was just kind of ready to do the next thing. Businesses outside of bars and nightclubs.
Such as?
So some of the biggest sports leagues in the world.
Now we're talking.
Big retail stores, things like that, grocery stand, like
off of the app.
Well, so we didn't imagine using the same technology that could tell you how busy the bar was, and instead use that on a stadium gate to be able to tell you how it lifts. And it was definitely very hands-on. You mean startup? You gotta do whatever needs to be done for that kind of stuff. So, but yeah, it was fun. Like went to a lot of places, like commissions and stuff. I definitely felt a little bit more comfortable about kind of striking out on my own. And I kind of done the other company that the one with the real estate stuff so, necessarily stick out too much, so those kinds of things, especially clothes, can have a huge effect on that. So just trying to give kids like help them be comfortable and confident in what they're wearing, if we can kind of be a part of that. And then obviously the sustainability of what we're trying to do, just the general of not needing so much consumption, especially with kids' clothes. Like obviously with us, we're only gonna grow so much in one direction to the other. It makes sense to have in the kids' market as well. So
you started Everlasting Wardrobe in 2016?
Yeah, so we started off by,
and we're the,
but more to be a marketing platform for them. So we actually, compared to all these other—
So let's take it from a different angle.
Sure.
What was the first like box that you sent out?
We sold all the stuff we couldn't use, the maternity shoes, accessories, all that kind of stuff, cashmere, $400 sweaters to Gilt and Rula.
Super smart, that's what you do with capital.
It's about 3 years ago or so, like right when we started, it kind of all happened almost at once. And then—
How often are they getting a monthly box?
Yeah, monthly, every 30 days, 8 pieces. And obviously you're giving us feedback every month to tell us what you liked and what you didn't and why.
Yeah.
So that really gives us the opportunity to kind of provide other, sorry. gives us the opportunity to provide other kind of goods. Just was a lot of times we found the parents have said, I like this, I don't like this. And then we try to send stuff that kind of pushes their limitations, like the probabilities of what they'll like and not like. And
so what kind of products are really resonating in the kids market right now? Like
almost like a discovery box every month of brands they've never heard of from all around the world and styles that might have either prints, colors, things like that, that they might not necessarily have as much experience with.
No fashion.
So it's not necessarily all slow fashion, but we won't pick like an H&M or Zara. You'll never see that in the boxes.
That's interesting.
Just because it's not, you mean, the other aspect is wear brand or an organic brand from like Australia, cotton brand from Australia, or stuff that they've never heard of before that they've never seen or touched or had their kid actually wear, and really getting a better understanding of what they like and don't like. And so, I mean, 2 years ago, I was probably, we had six brand partners at this time. You know, and now we're up to 130.
That's
so
fantastic.
Definitely making moves in that space. And really just kind of logically sitting them down. All these other box services are like, buy this, you have 3 days. And at some point you start to get buyer fatigue and you don't really necessarily want anything else. And you know that their son or daughter, like as far as like the nice things they said about what they got or how they were took a picture and they're like smiling and they're super happy about what they're wearing and stuff like that. That's kind of, I guess, what gets me excited more than anything, like just giving these kids like that confidence. And also, you mean, as far as the sustainability of what we're doing, trying to make this entire, there's so much waste in children's industry, especially kids grow out of clothes so fast. This is just really an option for them not to necessarily have to purchase so much. And then when they do purchase.
As a CEO, in what ways?
Sure. I think the biggest by far has been organization. Really, that's never been one of my strong suits. And I mean, kind of as a CEO, you're the boss, but then you're also the janitor. So in that kind of vein, like, you know, I mean, you're responsible for getting everything done, whether out of it and started referring their friends and people in their different networks, whether it be from like religious groups or school or of course, dealing with the fun part of that.
I think this is too many people start the seed round before they have any traction, any block. And I think that's wrong. Like, I know a lot of people do it, but when you have...
Hello, startup hunters. Thank you guys so much for listening. This podcast would be nothing without you. And also, this podcast is a startup, so I need all the help that I can get. Would you please leave me a good review in the App Store? This would be huge. That's it. On to the episode.
Here with Joshua Luft of Everlasting Wardrobe, which is...
So we're the first children's rental membership for apparel.
Okay, so on this show, I don't know if you know, but we go all the way back.
Okay.
So here's what I want to know. Where were you born and what did your parents do?
Sure. I was born in New Jersey in like Bergen County, so not too...
Love Bergen.
Yeah, not too far away from here.
I know. Monmouth. That was actually my first job.
Oh, really?
I was in Monmouth.
Very cool. I'm a lot smaller of a town called Oradell, so...
Hold on.
No worries.
These are the...
A little fickle.
These are the starting adjustments.
No problem.
So Monmouth.
From Oradell, New Jersey, small town, just a few thousand people. So definitely a lot smaller than Monmouth. We grew up there pretty much my whole life. Parents, my mom was a college professor. She recently retired about a year ago, so she's enjoying the relaxing life now. Just
so mom is a college professor. Dad
is a he works in a company that does metal cards.
So neither of your parents were entrepreneurs, or did your mom go and start a business?
Father did with my uncle. It was in like potted plants, probably back in like the 80s, early 90s.
So did that grow and get acquired by Home Depot?
No, unfortunately, they didn't kind of go where they wanted it to, but. So I got to kind of see just at least it wasn't necessarily successful, but I got to see kind of like that drive and the excitement of creating your own thing and seeing something, you know what I mean, as far as I guess what they were selling at the time wasn't something that was offered anywhere and really pretty successful, and then kind of seeing it not so successful after other people started to catch on. So it's interesting to kind of see from that side of the business.
So what was your first hustle as a kid?
To be honest, I was more of a worker than like a hustler necessarily. I mean, delivering newspapers,
there you go.
Coaching little, like soccer, youth soccer, or reffing, I'm sorry, not coaching. I mean, I think probably the biggest, as far as the hustling side, is more like the organizing the weekly, like tackle football games and stuff with the buddies from elementary school, getting everyone kind of called up and, I mean, at the field at the right time, and just kind of obviously in the before the times of cell phones, just kind of hoping everyone that says they're coming will actually come. So
I love it. So sports leadership, we're seeing that from a really young age, and now getting a little bit older, what was the first thing? Did you ever sell something for money when you were a kid? You know,
Nothing like that. I mean, I wasn't a big lemonade stand person. Yeah. I don't think. I'm sure I did that once or twice, but it certainly wasn't like a regular thing for me by any means. Like I said, always working, lifeguarding, teaching swim lessons. I guess occasionally babysitting. So that's a little bit.
So hustling. You're hustling.
Trying to, you know, kind of things. I don't think I necessarily had the confidence to call it that at the time, but I mean, just kind of finding things that people had already done and doing well at them, or at least kind of getting myself out there to other people. So obviously being a youth soccer ref or a lifeguard at a local swim pool makes it a lot easier to meet people to teach swim lessons to or to babysit
for. Okay, so college, where'd you go to school?
Indiana University.
Now, you're in New Jersey. Why Indiana?
I probably wanted to get as far away from New Jersey as possible, but I don't know, more so business school was great.
What's his business school?
Kelly Business School.
Now, was Mark Cuban already out of there?
We actually ran the same bar.
Really?
But different, obviously different ownership, because he owned it at the time that he was there.
Did you own that bar?
No, not me personally. I was just a general manager and assistant manager, head bartender. You mean all from the different ranks. It was like one of the highest grossing bars in the country.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a cool experience to get to learn sales and operations at such a huge scale where some little change, like eliminating quarters, for example, can increase, you mean, tens of thousands of dollars of sales a night.
How many bartenders were operating in that whole thing?
In the one bar that I started at, we started with 7, and then we expanded and built out. So I think by the end of the time I left at the one bar, it was 28, 30 on a night, 30
holy
bartenders in a night.
So we're talking like 10, 20 grand a night.
Oh, well, I mean, I think they're making minimum that. I mean, I used to sell like $10,000 sometimes myself.
Oh my God.
Like on a big like football weekend or something.
Holy
like
cow,
that.
Man. So it was, this is high volume.
And and it's all like $3 Grey Goose shots and $2, you know what I mean, beers and stuff. So
$3 Grey Goose? Like actual Grey Goose?
Yeah, no, we were not the type that would ever do the, I don't know if you want to cross.
Well liquors?
Yeah, well, we did well liquor, but like, not the type, obviously, like pouring bottles into another or anything like
right.
any of the nefarious stuff, but
holy crap, come back.
Yeah, I don't think he's letting us go through.
That guy means business.
Yeah.
look at this guy. That guy is meant business.
Very fast.
Left side.
No, for sure. So yeah, so that was a cool experience. It was, as far as the bar went, like it just everything was very much on special. So I love the bar.
So you did that all 4 years?
Longer than that. I stayed in Bloomington a few years after. I didn't start till I was 20, 21, and then I probably went till about 27, 28, and then I finally...
Oh, real late starter.
Yeah, so I stuck around school a while after, just because the money was good and it was fun.
Sure, you know? I mean, if you're making 30 grand a night, I'm sure the money was great. Now, did you have any side hustles? Did you start any businesses of your own?
We started something in school. It's called B-Town Living. Really like, you mean rent.com or apartments.com before all those existed, but just for the like Bloomington where Indiana University was. So, you know, for us, I don't know if you want to go back that way, but yeah, for us, it was kind of like, I think the biggest thing we found and that was lacking on most of those sites were just that kids cared about location more than anything.
So what was this business?
So it was like a kind of a apartment housing rental, like as far as like-
What year are we talking?
I don't know, 2000, no worries. 2000, oh, sorry, I didn't know I was not getting the camera. 2000, what is that, 7, I guess?
Okay.
So pretty early before any of these other ones are starting to do like location, as far as like the, you know, make the circle, the squiggly line or whatever to, just be careful because of the chain, be like, you know what I mean? Like when you're looking for an apartment now in New York, it's like kind of like figure out which neighborhoods you want to live in.
So how did that business go? Was it a failure? Was it a success?
Definitely failure, but it was a fun experience. You know, made some money off of it, but.
What do you think your biggest failure was? Why did it fail?
I didn't have the technical talent to make the changes that we needed to, kind of like on the fly. And I had done it with a friend, but he was already at a full-time job, so it's kind of a side project to him. So
it's one of the it's one of those classic things where it's difficult to motivate your co-founder sufficiently.
Exactly,
and incentivize him,
have a crazy amount of revenue coming in either. So, you know what I mean, it's not like he was like scoffing at hundreds of thousands of dollars or anything.
So, all right, so that petered that petered out.
Yeah,
and then what's next?
So still at the bar, I mean, still doing that kind of throughout the whole period, which was nice because it kind of gave me the safety net with all of it. But and obviously a network. This company came to me that did like an app that was actually like using video-based like software so that you could tell, like within a physical location, how many people were there as far as like the percentage full, the male-female ratio, even like the average age. It was like kind of like a more consumer-facing app where, especially in college towns and things like that, where you didn't know where you want to go out that night. You kind of could be sitting on your couch and have an idea of what is around you before you even left your house. Really kind of obviously save you hundreds of thousands of dollars, I'm sure, or thousands of dollars on cabs and things like that, going to the place that
where no was one's this?
At. When I was in Bloomington still. So they kind of came up to me as a GM at that bar and try to pitch me the idea, and I was really interested in it, so I started helping them sell to the other bars, and then
this cab service?
No, it was not cabs. It was like literally like an app with like location-based services. So you were at home, you saw the 10 bars in your town, how full they were, like the guy-girl ratio, the average age. So you're
got
like,
it. Okay, you I, have got, a better I get. Idea I get this. I get the. Yeah, I get so this kind of nightclub.
Exactly. Turns out nightclub owners don't like data.
Do you want to try holding
it? Yeah, sure.
And just try.
More lean forward.
Well, not that much. Oh, okay. Just try and not.
Yeah, no worries. I just want to get your thing wet. So kind of with this, like with that company, we found out bar owners don't really care about data. So it was kind of hard to sell them on, I mean, improving their operations and things like that. We did get a lot of, traction with like the liquor brands, and people like don't want to know how their tastings and their samplings are going and things like that.
I think this is really good. Yeah, let's make a loop to sort of get you back. I think this is really good because you're getting such, this is such a good entrepreneurial testbed. Like this bar is I have to like sort of make a trip to this bar.
Well, it's actually pretty unbelievable. It's different ownership now, so I don't know if it necessarily.
Let's get on the sidewalk.
I still have a decent amount of friends that work there, so.
But still, it's like hallowed ground because like Mark Cuban was there, you were there.
He was at. So we bought. Oh, I didn't necessarily buy anything because I didn't have any money, but.
Get a little ahead of me.
Sure. The ownership bought.
Also like this.
That again. Sorry. The ownership bought a third bar.
Okay, so I don't want to go there.
Sure. As far as Cuban, yeah, so different bar, not this, like, I ran. We opened that third one that was Cuban's one previously.
So yeah. How did this? What was the name of this location app?
Kilroy's.
How did Kilroy's sort of end come to a conclusion?
Just left. It's very easy to. It's very easy to kind of, as far as the cash we're making, stuff like that, to stick around. It was really enjoyable. It was fun, environment to work. At some point, though, like it went from like 99% friends and 1% customers to 99% customers and 1% friends. So it was less interesting to get paid to go out because, you weren't necessarily with your friends anymore. So for that aspect, I was just kind of ready to do the next thing. It was a really fun kind of industry to be in.
What was the next thing?
So I end up still working for that that company as far as like they did all the stuff with the bars. I kind of continue with them and really started to get them into businesses outside of bars and nightclubs.
Such as?
Some of the biggest sports leagues in the world.
Now we're talking.
Like big retail stores, things like that, grocery stores. We worked with even like car mechanics, things like that. All those types of kind of businesses that want to know actually who's coming in their business every. Yeah, I don't know how to single this one. You can go ahead. I can go.
No, you go first.
So really get a better understanding of who's walking into their business. For example, sports stadiums, just the sponsorship dollars they were able to make just off our data to be able to really understand like
off of the app.
Well, so we didn't imagine using the same technology that could tell you how busy the bar was, and instead use that on a stadium gate to be able to tell you how many people.
So did you actually get these partnerships going?
Yeah, I got the partnerships going. I literally like installed the technology from 50-foot lifts, and
now we're talking.
It was definitely very hands-on. You mean startup? You gotta do whatever needs to be done for that kind of stuff. So, but yeah, it was fun. Like went to a lot of places. You mean that were amazing, and then went to some other ones that weren't necessarily places I'd probably visit on my own dime, but you know, it's cool to experience different parts of the country.
What was this company called?
Doorstat.
And how long were you at Doorstat?
A few years, kind of did stuff with them and transitioned. When I came up with this idea for Everlasting Wardrobe, I kind of helped out still on, not consulting necessarily, helped with like business development, get them new clients and things like that, but kind of passed on the actual operations role to somebody else and kind of really went into Everlasting Wardrobe.
So
full-time.
What year did you start Everlasting Wardrobe?
So 2017, 16, like end of 16, I think. I think it was like right at the end there was like idea inception.
Now, were you based in Indiana? Where were you based?
I was back in New York by then, just because with all like the sports leagues and stuff, it was a little bit easier to be in the city for all those conversations.
Back in New York. And so you're here. Did you just sort of quit your job at Doorstat?
No, I mean, like we're still, very, very amicable split. You know, I mean, nothing like bad at all on that kind of level. Something more I was more passionate about. I mean, I'm definitely very thankful to that company because that's kind of where I got my data interest.
Yes.
You mean sales, operations, biz dev from the bar, but.
So what I'm getting at is, you're sort of in this, you know, this place 2016, you're like not having something to do. You maybe have some capital saved up, which gives you confidence to go pursue something. Am I sort of on the right page?
Yeah, like with the bar and with the, obviously with some of the commissions and stuff, I definitely felt a little bit more comfortable about kind of striking out on my own. And I kind of done the other company that the one with the real estate stuff in Bloomington with one other person, but I don't know necessarily if I that was like probably a year endeavor, so I wouldn't say necessarily I gave that my all by any means compared to this. But yeah, it was just wanted to see things different, run different, kind of had this idea as far as what we're doing, and really seeing so much pushback from the beginning, especially with the brands that we're supposed to be trying to partner with, and eventually being able to convince them logically that we were the right move to partner with, definitely got some excitement as well. So idea inception, I try to like help out other friends, consult here and there, little things. And a friend started this kind of like more mid-level price but high quality ski company as far as like ski suits and stuff like that. And we were talking about whether or not to go in the children's market for him. And then we were talking about
like children's ski?
Yeah, ski wear, like kind of like as far as like the full snow suits and stuff like that. Obviously they're really expensive. And then we were talking about like kids, was it worth it to go into that market for him? Really determining like as far as, how little they could actually wear the clothes and how quickly they grow out of them. I think that's really where the idea necessarily clicked as far as just like, why don't they rent all their clothes? Obviously, I mentioned this to you previously, but
stop. Sure. They're distracting us.
No worries.
Keep talking.
So for niece and nephew, from like my niece and nephew, lucky enough to buy presents for them, and more than occasionally, especially when buying clothes or shoes and stuff like that, they grow out of them so quick. It's kind of disappointing. Something you spent your hard-earned money on, and want them to kind of be excited about, but it literally only fits them for a few months.
Of course, it's a very common problem.
So it's definitely something I had dealt with like as an uncle. So, and then I obviously also just as a child, I think my parents are wonderful people, but that's not necessarily fashion. Isn't really their forte or one of their strong suits. It was nice. It would be nice to have had this kind of service as a kid as well.
Do you have siblings?
Two. I'm a middle child, one older,
one
younger.
You were getting hand-me-downs and giving hand-me-downs?
Not from them. Two sisters. So they were more kind of helping me get dressed as I got older, which was nice. But as far as I had three cousins that lived in the town over that were literally all like a half a foot taller than me, and I was like a little stringy kid at the time, so definitely a size or two bigger. So I dealt with the hand-me-downs and stuff like that. I didn't necessarily mind that part so much, just, you know, being comfortable and confident. Elementary school, middle school, it's a tough time to be a kid. It's, you know what I mean, you want to not necessarily stick out too much, so those kinds of things, especially clothes, can have a huge effect on that. So I mean, just trying to give kids like help them be comfortable and confident in what they're wearing, if we can kind of be a part of that. And then obviously the sustainability of what we're trying to do, just the general not needing so much consumption, especially with kids' clothes. Like obviously with us, we're only going to grow so much in one direction to the other, lose so much weight or gain so much weight. With kids, literally 3 months, 6 months later, nothing fits anymore. So when that kind of happens, it seems like if rentals already, I mean, we're certainly not breaking down any barriers necessarily with all these great rental companies out in the apparel space already. So if rental's already kind of proven, why doesn't it make sense to have it in the kids market as well?
So you started Everlasting Wardrobe in 2016?
Yeah, so we started off by...
And were there any kids...
Nothing kids rental. The only kids rental company that's really out right now is still Rent the Runway, and they're more formal rentals, like kind of one-off rentals.
And they're just not a kids company, so their brand...
just started kids.
I know, but their brand is not kids.
No, but I mean, it definitely makes sense from like formal rentals and stuff like that, but they definitely took a different model approach, both from a member perspective and from a brand partner perspective. I mean, with a lot of these brands that are in the space, whether they're a rental or not, are almost like competitors to the clothing brand. So in these cases,
I so disagree. I think you know, a rental service only helps a brand.
Definitely. Well, in a lot of cases, but the problem is, you mean if you're renting so you don't have to buy, though, you're kind of making it so, you mean, especially for people that are our size, you mean all you're doing is renting so you didn't have to purchase from that brand. So that the rental company is the one that's getting all the margin and stuff.
Sure, but I still maintain that it's a failure of the brand to understand the evolving marketplace.
Definitely. I mean, I think it's definitely important for brands to get into rental.
So for example, like another way that brands are really slow is responding to is Zappos.
Sure.
Because you know, Zappos just does free returns, mm-hmm. which is fantastic.
The whole Amazon,
which is fantastic. No, but Zappos specifically...
Didn't they get bought by Amazon?
They did, but Zappos specifically has a separate board and zero Amazon culture. Like,
I didn't know
Zappos
that.
Does it the Zappos way.
Very cool.
But you have D2C brands, mm-hmm. for example, literally the shoes I'm wearing right now, that, you know, sort of copy the Zappos model, yet they are so much slower. Like, it took 2.5 weeks. I have $1,000 worth of shoes that were outstanding, and it took them 2 weeks. Whereas Zappos, you know, gets me that refund back like the day I press the button.
So those aspects for sure. I mean, I think just in general, coming up with different ways to get distribution and find awareness about your product. I mean, we pitched it to brands not being like an e-com box for them, but more to be a marketing platform for them. So we actually, compared to all these other...
So let's take it from a different angle.
Sure.
What was the first like box that you sent out for Everlasting Wardrobe?
So it was, I mean, we did alpha testing. So we ended up purchasing from a few liquidated boutiques, like literally everything.
Sure.
We sold all the stuff we couldn't use, the maternity shoes, accessories, all that kind of stuff, cashmere, $400 sweaters to Gilt and Rulalas of the world.
Is that it?
To flip all those kinds of non-applicable goods, made some operating revenue, and then took everything that we could use and started sending out boxes just to friends for free.
Got it. So super smart. That's what you do with capital.
It's about 3 years ago or so, like right when we started, it kind of all happened almost at once. And then we've been sending out paid beta boxes since I think our longest customers are at 25 or 26 months now.
Now, how often are they? Are they getting a monthly box?
Yeah, monthly. Every 30 days, 8 pieces.
And if they don't like a piece in a box?
So it's rental, so the goal is that you get all the 8 pieces for 30 days. You might not like every single piece, but we hope that you like as many of them as possible. And obviously, you're giving us feedback every month to tell us what you liked and what you didn't and why.
Yeah.
So that really gives us the opportunity to kind of provide other... sorry. Gives us the opportunity to provide other kind of goods. Just was a lot of times we found the parents have said, I like this, I don't like this, and then we try to send stuff that kind of pushes their limitations, like the probabilities of what they'll like and not like. And
so what kind of products are really resonating in the kids market right now? Like, what's hot?
It just depends on what the parent is really into. So we kind of base things on like style genres, do everything on music branding. Parents are able to kind of tell
us. Music branding?
Yeah, so our whole company's kind of based around music and stuff like that.
I literally don't understand music has to do with children.
So it's more about the clothing genre. So as far as like jazz is like preppy classical looks, whereas like indie folk is more kind of like sustainable, eco-friendly. Hip hop is streetwear, pop is trendy. Funk is like wild, crazy prints and things like that. So parents aren't picking individual pieces. They're just giving us a kind of an understanding of what they like and don't like. And then from there, we're helping kind of with our recommendation engine and with our stylists. We pick an assortment of 8 pieces, something they haven't seen before yet, from us at least. Try to pick different brands, different styles. So it's really just trying to give them almost like a discovery box every month of brands they've never heard of from all around the world and styles they might have either prints, colors, things like that, that they might not necessarily have as much experience with.
Now, are you dealing with like big brands like Oshkosh?
So we don't do any fast fashion brands. We wouldn't carry brand like that.
So that's part of your,
sustainability focus. Yeah, it's trying to not pick out any fast fashion brands.
Your slow fashion.
So it's not necessarily all slow fashion, but we won't pick like an H&M or Zara. You'll never see that in the boxes.
That's interesting.
Just because it's not, the other aspect is the discoverability of what we're doing. Everyone's seen all those pieces 1,000 times or in 1,000 stores. So we're not really introducing them to anything new if we sent those. So we're more about finding like a Japanese streetwear brand or an organic brand from like Australia, cotton brand from Australia, or stuff that they've never heard of before that or they've never seen or touched or had their kid actually wear, and really getting a better understanding of what they like and don't like and what they're willing to spend money on, and kind of getting a better understanding of what they actually want for their child.
So what are your biggest challenges right now?
So at first it was just bringing on brand partners, just because, as I mentioned, we're not doing it like kind of the other brands in the space. We've gotten all our inventory for free or at a profit. So really in the beginning it was getting these brands on board to buy in and give us thousands of pieces of free products, because and see it as a marketing expense, not like they were giving it to us for free.
So how do you get a brand to give you free stuff?
Well, that's probably the hardest part of the business. So, 2 years ago I was probably, we had 6 brand partners at this time, and now we're up to 130.
That's fantastic.
Definitely making moves in that space. And really just kind of logically sitting them down and explaining to them why it was worth it, and compared to like spending $150 to $200 to acquire a customer on Google or Facebook, how they could use their inventory that potentially they've already even created or manufactured already, and how that could be turned into a marketing map.
Right, and I think, and we were literally just talking about that, how Instagram and Facebook is a waste of money. So why don't you use a different marketing channel, AKA a box that has great subscriptions, and this box happens to be called My Everlasting Wardrobe. So I think that is a billion times more effective. If you get experiential marketing is so much more effective in a digital age. Like you touch it, you feel it, you make an instant connection with it. So I get that. That is,
I completely agree with you. That's kind of what we were looking for, like towards mostly more than anything, as far as the experiential marketing, really just kind of having that high quality impression and engagement in that family's home, where all these other box services are like, buy this, you have 3 days. And at some point you start to get buyer fatigue and you don't really necessarily want anything else. Give them the confidence in what we're doing. And now that we're, when we're at 6 or 10, a lot of people are taking a chance on us. Brands are still taking a chance on us by giving us free inventory, but.
So here's how is your relationship with children evolved since starting this company?
Nothing crazy. I like kids. I babysat, youth soccer ref, all that kind of stuff. So I've been around kids probably my whole life. So I don't think anything changed necessarily. And to be honest, I don't really deal with kids on a daily basis, just because it's packing boxes, talking to brands. So I don't really kind of have that luxury by any means at this point anyway. But I think it's when you get to like a call from a parent, like a mom or dad's letting you know that their son or daughter, as far as the nice things they said about what they got, or how they took a picture and they're like smiling and they're super happy about what they're wearing and stuff like that. That's kind of, I guess, what gets me excited more than anything, like just giving these kids like that confidence. And also, you mean, as far as the sustainability of what we're doing, trying to make this entire, there's so much waste, in children's industry especially, kids wear out of clothes so fast. This is just really an option for them not to necessarily have to purchase so much. And then when they do purchase, they've already a lot of times experienced that brand for 30 days. So they know their kid loves it. They know that they're not going to fight to put it on, things like that. So really just giving them that confidence there.
So this is 67. Where's 220? Or does it matter that I get you back to 220?
No, not at all.
Okay. So here's the final question.
Sure.
How have you grown as a CEO? In what ways?
Sure. I think the biggest by far has been organization. Really, it's never been one of my strong suits. And I mean, kind of as a CEO, you're the boss, but then you're also the janitor. So in that kind of vein, like, you know, I mean, you're responsible for getting everything done, whether it be kind of boxes that didn't go out, cataloging that hasn't gotten done, all those kinds of things. So I just think knowing that, like, kind of everything's your fault, and kind of embracing that and really kind of being fine with that and making sure that everything that needs to get done is getting done, and really just kind of going through like the paces of that and really understanding that, like, you mean, there's so much to do, and no matter what, just kind of keep kind of forging ahead, because it's really never going to stop. So
indeed,
just this really kind of getting excited about
most
it.
People think that like launching the product is crossing a finish line.
Oh, no way.
It's crossing the starting line.
We're now in the member acquisition part. So that's the fun. We had the brand partner acquisition, getting all that inventory and getting, I mean, tens of thousands of pieces of clothing for free at a profit. And now for us, it's been just really getting to the tens of thousands of members and try to push up on that kind of side of it, because, I mean, it really doesn't take a lot of families to be using our product to be extremely successful, especially with our unit margins. So really just kind of pushing on that. And we've been super confident with all the parents that have been using it so far, that they've really gotten a lot of value out of it and started referring their friends and people in their different networks, whether it be from like religious groups or school or just people on the playground. So it's definitely pretty great to have so many like brand evangelists out there as well.
So you're raising fundraising?
Yeah, we just started our seed round. So. Of course, still
this, the so fun I, part I of that. Think this is such a. Too many people start the seed round before they have any traction, any blah, and I think that's wrong. Yeah. Like, I know a lot of people do it, but when you have traction, right, and you actually have revenue,
definitely,
like you're no longer begging investors; they're starting to sell to you.
For sure, and for us, I think the hardest thing for the translating what we do for seed investors has been really kind of pushing on the brand partner aspect of what we're doing, because we don't, obviously, as we're focused on members now, it hasn't been extremely hard to bring on new members. I think anytime we get to really talk about what we do and explain it to a parent, it's pretty kind of catch-all, as far as whether the sustainability or the economics, or just the discoverability of what we're doing. But really convincing, I mean, 130 brands to give us tens of thousands of pieces for free, I think has really been kind of the secret sauce of what we're doing. It lets us really kind of price the model to make it economical for everyone as well. It really gives us the option to kind of help these brands out as much as possible. I mean, really, as I mentioned, not necessarily competing with them for margin or to retarget their customers, really try to help those brands out as well and help them succeed and try to push them towards more sustainable practices, whether it be manufacturing or kinds of other aspects of their business.
This is fantastic. So it's a real win-win-win-win-win.
Hopefully that's the goal for sure.
So thank you so much for coming on, Joshua.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much for having me. I'm glad we got such great weather for it.
Too. I know. And look at the matching wardrobe and everything.
We 100%
this
planned
this. This was not planned.
So it was 100%. Don't let him lie to you. It was planned. That's